So this is your second class on understanding Brexit, and I wanted to start with just a little bit of information about what's happening today in Britain, because of course everybody in Britain is panicking. Well, not everybody, but my mother is panicking. Because perhaps you followed Theresa May and the Conservative government have a plan for the process of Brexit, a newish plan, which they call the Chequers plan, because it was written in a house called Chequers. But the European Union, the 27, are not happy with it. But the Conservative government does not have a second plan. So it is a major political crisis, probably the biggest crisis for at least 50 years in Britain at the moment. And some of the complications, of course. It's possible to have no deal, and then, you know, it could be quite messy. Now, Britain, the British government does not want no deal, and the European Union does not want no deal. However, the British government is risking much more. There are 27 countries. If the countries all have a problem with England, for each country it's a small problem, but for Britain it's a big one. So the problem with the negotiations is you have one country on one side and 27 countries on the other. Yeah. So obviously the strong negotiation partner is the European Union, because they're much bigger. The other thing which is very important is that this week the Conservative Party, the party in government, have their annual conference. Every year they have a conference. And to the conference come people from conservatives from every town around the country, and they debate and discuss and listen to their leaders and give their opinions. And this is a complication, because, of course, we always imagine, well, you have a conservative government, so they do conservative things. In fact, in Britain, when you are the prime minister, you have a number of factors that you need to handle. First of all, you have your members of parliament. In the case of Theresa May, not quite a majority in the House. So you have to keep your members of parliament approximately happy. And secondly, you have your party. It's not the same thing. The members of parliament might have one opinion, and the party, who are the people in every town who go giving out leaflets and knocking on doors and doing the everyday work at election time, they might have a different opinion. And the problem that Theresa has right now is that her party is divided, and the party conference may not support her, even though she is Prime Minister and leader of the Conservative Party. So it's quite explosive. But what's interesting for you is to see the different role of the governments, the parliamentary party, the group of MPs, the political party, around the place, and then of course also the rhetoric of negotiation, because if you have a big negotiation, of course you must look scary. You know, if you don't give me what I want, things will be horrible for you. Yes, this is normal. Yes, so everybody is saying, oh, it's going to be a terrible catastrophe. It might be, but it might not be. Yeah, it's normal to exaggerate in this kind of crisis. Yeah, so you if you read the newspapers, apart from having a large number of extremely superficial analyses, you also get a lot of exaggeration. And as I mentioned last week, you get a lot of people saying, oh, well, let's think about the psychology of Theresa May. This is not the problem. Yeah, the psychology of Theresa May is not the problem. The big problem is that the British business leaders, British business company owners, wanted Remain. But the Conservative Party, which is normally the party of business, is completely divided. So that's the center of the crisis there, which is very unusual. Usually the Conservative Party is not as divided as the Labour Party, which is kind of normal, because if you want change, you can get very divided. Conservative means keep the same, so it's not necessary. Now, normally, traditionally, the Conservative Party was not as political as the Labour Party, because conserving, well, it's not so controversial. So let me continue where I was last week, and just a final reminder that that's where you will get all the information you need. And last week we went through the history, and we arrived at the campaign of 2016, and finally we arrived at the results of the campaign, which I'm hoping to look at now, especially if my iPad will wake up. Oh, there it is. 1980s, 1990s, the referendum campaign. And here we come to the referendum results. The referendum results. Now, the first thing is that people were very, very surprised indeed. The radio, the French radio, Radio Normandie, phoned me up the day before and said, "Can we phone you in the morning for a comment on radio?" And when I got up at 6 o'clock, I looked at it. Oh my God, it's completely opposite. So I had to do some revision. And the immediately result was that the Prime Minister resigned. David Cameron resigned 2 days later. He was kind of obliged. He was the Prime Minister. He said, he organised, let's have a referendum. You should vote Remain. Remain is the correct answer, please. You know, very, very, here is the explanation and so on. So when the referendum voted against Remain, he could not realistically say, oh, I am the perfect person to organise Brexit. Yeah, it was not politically possible. So it was. I was sure he was going to resign. Now, the first day he said he was not going to resign, and the journalist on the radio was saying, oh, he's not going to resign, Mr. Mullen, but he's just a journalist. And so I knew he was going to resign, and he did resign. But first of all, let's look at the international reactions. First of all, we got the Le Monde Weekend, Le Royaume-Uni quitte l'Europe. Les Britanniques ont voté pour le Brexit à 51,9%. Les bourses et la livre en forte baisse. David Cameron démissionnera en octobre, effectivement, c'était ce qu'il a décidé de faire. Quel avenir pour l'Écosse et l'Irlande du Nord? Réunion d'urgence des ministres européens samedi. This is what you call a political crisis. Yep. Although also you notice that even Le Monde goes for this shortcut, Le Royaume-Uni quitte l'Europe, whereas of course Le Royaume-Uni va rester exactement où il est, il ne va pas quitter l'Europe, simplement l'Union Européenne qui est un traité. So this is a shortcut, but it's important because a lot of the arguments for the European Union have been very emotional. Why do you want to leave us and separate yourself from us? Our marriage has been so beautiful, etc. The New York Times. Oh, we were very pleased, the British, because, you know, Britain is a small country and we don't often get the front page of the New York Times. Yes, I mean, we got the front page of the New York Times. British stun world. Yeah, wow, we stunned the world. Étonne le monde. Même stun, c'est plus fort que étonné. Le monde était époustouflé, but with vote to leave EU, although we only got half of the front page because in the New York Times, not in British newspapers, but in the New York Times, they have often two headlines on completely different subjects. Now, this is only American newspapers do this. You don't do this in France either. And this is the the German. Now, Bild-Zeitung. Now, Bild-Zeitung is a very popular newspaper. A lot of scandal and celebrities, and some politics. And you can see here, yeah. Can you see the joke here? Yeah, that you have out, which is quitter, but also ouch, which in English and German is aïe, ça fait mal. Yeah, so, good headline. And Schwarzer Tag für Europa. Anybody? Very good. Yes, very good. A black day for Europe. Yeah, a black day for Europe. So, yeah, not happy these. Who else do we have? Well, let's see what the Italians said. La Repubblica. Brexit testa a testa nella notte in gioco il futuro dell'Unione. Testa a testa, c'est tête à tête dans le sens qu'il y en a, c'est 50-50. Ils ont publié juste avant le résultat. C'est 50-50. But what is interesting about what the Republica says is the future of the union is at stake. So this opinion is not just a British crisis. The future of the European Union is at stake. Yeah, so we will look at this question in a moment. So you're quite big ones. We've got the front page there, and there you get the vote Remain for the European. This is a young girl who cannot decide. She has the two flags, she cannot decide. It's not a very good photograph, really, is it? Anyway, among the British newspapers, a couple of the Conservative newspapers were happy. So here you have The Sun. The Sun, again, is a very popular newspaper. A lot of scandal and sports. In fact, most people read it for the sport, actually, not for the conservatism. And there you have a group of celebrating Leave voters. Yeah, and there you have the out 52%, in 42%. Leave claims win in a huge poll. Now, that's interesting information. Huge poll. The turnout, on the en français, la participation, the turnout was very high, which is an important element, of course. And the classic method of the sum, which is to use a play on words, see you later, with you spelt as EU, see you later. It's a tradition. The other newspapers who were in favour of Remain were less happy. This is the day after the referendum decision. Cameron faces fight for survival. So political survival, of course. And in fact, he would resign fairly quickly as Britain sets course for Brexit. So you can see it's much more calm. Nevertheless, Pound plunges by 9%. Farage claims victory. Farage was the leader of the United Kingdom Independence Party, which was a far-right party, not a fascist party, but a far-right party. Tory Leave MPs pledge to back PM come what may. Yeah, so they're promising to back the Prime Minister. Of course they won't, but they... another one, again, out... Global Shock, this is the I, which is a relatively left-wing newspaper. Out. Global Shock as Britain quits EU. Yeah? Britain votes to leave EU in stunning blow to Europe. Again, they're saying that it's going to damage Europe. It's going to damage Europe. Now, the I is produced by the newspaper The Independent. And what is particular about them today is that they are running a big campaign for a second referendum. They are campaigning now. Every day there are 10 articles in The Independent why we must have a second referendum. And we will look at this question. I don't think there will be a second referendum. Another conservative newspaper, very happy. We're out. Much more emotional. Approach. After 43 years, UK freed from the shackles. On a jeté les chaînes de l'Union européenne. PM in crisis, etc. The 5 a.m. referendum is special. Usually, the national newspapers are usually put to bed, as we say, at 11 o'clock in the evening. That's the normal time when you get... Your last news is 11 o'clock in the evening. In exceptional circumstances, they hold it. And they wait, and they work all night, and they can do it at 5 o'clock, at 5 o'clock in the morning. And my favourite one, is a more left-wing newspaper, a popular newspaper, the only Labour-voting left newspaper. I say that because the newspapers in Britain, when there is an election, they have on the front page, vote Labour or vote Conservative. French newspapers do not do this. We know that Le Figaro wants us to vote for Macron, but it is not on the front page. So it's a very, very British thing of which to do. So we have the Daily Mirror. We're out. Britain votes to quit the EU. Pound goes into free fall. So a fairly neutral headline. We're out. And this is because the Daily Mirror campaigned for Remain, but they know that a lot of their readers did not agree with them. And so they're being kind of neutral. And a very, very interesting picture then. You can see the makeup of Britain. But what is happening to the makeup? Can you see it's all cracking and it's in bad condition? So I think that's very, very good photograph. It says, we're British, but it's all falling to pieces. Yeah, that's quite good journalism there. Very last one, Scotland. Scotland has spoken. What now? Which introduces us to one of the contradictions of the present situation. The majority of people in Scotland voted Remain. The majority of people in Northern Ireland voted Remain. The majority in England and Wales voted Leave. So this complicates the situation somewhat. Although I think in France it's important to remind you that, let's see if you know, what is the percentage of the UK population that lives in England? Would you like to guess? 70. 70, okay. Anybody else got an idea? More than 70? Less than 70. Who thinks it's more than 70? Who thinks it's less than 70? Who doesn't know? Who doesn't care? Okay, yeah, 85. Yeah, 85, yeah. This is important. The reason that the French never know this, and the reason is that the French love the Irish, and they love the Scottish, and the English, well, they're all right, the English, I suppose, but it's not the same, passion, you know. And so the French always have this impression, oh, Scotland is this huge. It's not. 85% of UK population lives in England. It does need to be remembered, because, of course, perhaps you weren't following, but there is now a Scottish Parliament in Edinburgh. It's been more than 10 years now, or 15 years or something, and there is a Welsh Parliament in Cardiff. Now, they have much less power than Westminster, but they have much more power than Conseil Régional en France, for example. It's a significant level of autonomy. So so there are going to be problems with Scotland, because Scotland is first of all, Scotland voted to remain, but also in Scotland there is quite a high level of national identity. People feel different. People feel Scottish. I went to a friend's house in Edinburgh, a Scottish friend. She was a university teacher, and so she had a lot of books. And I suddenly noticed that she had literature. English literature, Scottish literature, yeah, in a separate bookshelf. This is not an accident, yeah? You have a separate bookshelf for your Scottish literature. That is national identity. Some of you must be Normans from Normandy, but if you have a lot of books, you don't keep the books written by Norman people in one on a different bookshelf. You know, it's not the same level of things. Okay, now of course the cartoonists had a wonderful time. The British love a joke, and so here is a cartoonist who is unhappy about Brexit, and he shows this is David Cameron, the Prime Minister, who is saying help, and of course is cutting with Brexit, is cutting the branch, and of course it's going to be a disaster. So there are many cartoons by those people who were in favour of Remain. Here's another one. So there's the European aeroplane, and Britain is leaving the aeroplane. Pardon me, sir, may I suggest you to take a parachute with you? Oh, thanks, the flag will do. Okay, again, the same joke. Est-ce que c'est un dessinateur anglais? Non, parce qu'il y a une erreur de grammaire dans la phrase. On ne dit pas I suggest you to take, on dit I suggest that you take. Donc, je crois que c'est un belge, en fait, celui-là. Here's a British one. What side is this? Is this cartoonist in favour of Brexit or in favour of Remain? You think Brexit? Why? Yeah, absolutely. They are in the EU, locked in the EU, with bars on the windows. This is the EU, and outside the EU. Yeah, this is a cartoon by somebody in favour of Brexit. Of course, cartoons are not supposed to give serious arguments. That's not generally their aim. And here you see, what's wrong? European Union rules and regulations. This is one of the arguments used against the European Union. There are too many regulations. And finally, a French one. Famous French, in fact, the most famous French cartoonist. What's his name? Front page of Le Monde? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there is a... Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, tu m'aurais bien fait chier. Okay, which is a reasonable interpretation of the situation. Another French one, yeah. I don't understand the problem, but you know, so yeah. There's a famous story 100 years ago. I don't know if it's true, But they said there was fog on the channel, fog between England and France. And they say that the headline in the Times was, "Fog on the channel, the continent is cut off." Le continent est isolé. It's a British way of looking at the world. Okay, so seriously now, let's have a look at the results of the referendum. And the first thing, the results of the referendum, is that 17 million people, 17 and a half million people, voted to leave the European Union. That's quite an impressive number. There has been no referendum in the past with such a high number of people voting for it. So very high turnouts. However, of course, 16 million, which is also a lot of people, went the other way. So the first thing to notice about it is it's an entire, very, very close division. This is perhaps a little surprising. You often have close divisions in elections, but that's more normal because the different parties adjust their programs to attract people in the middle. So that's 50-50 is not surprising for an election if the parties are prepared to adapt their programs. But here it was a yes-no question, 50-50. But you can see the difference that 15 million of the 17 million in England, 13 million of the 16 million in England. I don't have the exact percentage, but England is the centre of the story. In Scotland, a million in favour of leaving and 1.5 million in favour of staying. Wales, 850 to 770. Northern Ireland, 350,000 to leave the European Union and 440,000 to stay. Now, the Northern Ireland situation is more difficult to explain, but I can explain the Scottish situation. Perhaps you remember that 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, 3 years ago, there was another referendum in Scotland to decide if Scotland should become an independent country. That's a much more radical change, much bigger change than leaving the EU. The independence people lost the referendum, but they got the highest support they'd ever had. I think it was 45, 55, something like that. So let's say that the feeling for independence in Scotland is very high. Not a majority, but very high. Inside the European Union, Scotland felt it had more influence. And being left alone with England is not so popular. So the centre of nationalist feeling, Scottish nationalist feeling, is to stay in the European Union. And this has led to a new debate because people said, in 2015. The independence supporters lost the referendum, but now the situation is different. Scotland is being obliged to leave the European Union against our wishes. So we should have a second referendum, not about the European Union, we should have a second referendum on the question of the independence of Scotland. And so there's now a debate in Scotland, should there be another referendum on independence? Now, this is a very delicate question. First of all, obviously, the British government were very, very relieved in 2015 when the independence supporters lost the referendum. They will not easily agree to a new referendum, and they must agree. They must agree for it to happen. But also, the independence people. You see, if you have one referendum for independence and you lose, well, that's hard. But they are the majority in the Scottish Parliament. They have a lot of influence. Yeah. If you have two referendums for independence and you lose both of them, politically you're just dead. So the independence people, they're not too enthusiastic for a second referendum unless they're sure they'll win, because losing twice is really bad politically, because there's a psychological dynamic. Yeah, and because they got 45% or something in the first, they have a good psychological dynamic. There's another reason as well, and that is that the Scottish National Party rose a lot 10 years ago because the Labour Party was not very left-wing. and so the more left-wing people went to the Scottish National Party. But now the Labour Party has changed, so the political situation for the Scottish National Party is not as good as it used to be. So that's the question of the different parts of Wales. Now Wales also has an autonomous parliament in Cardiff. And they have responsibility for, you know, universities and education and health, quite a lot of things. But obviously, they don't have responsibility for the money and the military, which are two big things. It does make a difference. If you live in Scotland, you pay nothing to go to university. If you live in England, you pay €11,000 a year. So, you know, it has a certain importance. Also, in Wales. Now, there is not a very strong feeling for independence in Wales. There is a movement for independence in Wales, but it's very small. It's very small. Whereas in Scotland, it's a big, powerful movement. I think what the Scottish National Party won in the referendum in 2015 is that the general opinion now in the United Kingdom is that Scottish independence is possible. Now, many people don't like it, but they won the argument that it is possible. Whereas 20 years ago, it was considered to be a joke. Whereas during the referendum argument, the Scottish National Party said, look at Denmark. It's the same population as Scotland. It's an independent country. And they gave a lot of examples. Okay, this is, of course, not the only country with problems with the national question. In Spain, the question of Catalonia is still very hot. Still very, very hot question, yeah? These are ones. So, this is the different parts of the United Kingdom, and I will come back to Northern Ireland, which is a complex jungle politically. So, what about Labour and Conservative? Now, we saw that many of the arguments in the referendum campaign were Conservative arguments against immigration, for nationalism. And some arguments were left-wing arguments for internationalism, against the lack of democracy, and so on. But this graph shows you, looks at the question, was it a left-right issue? Was it a division between left and right? So, yeah, Brexit, Remain, is this the left and the right? The short answer is no. Yeah. If you look at me, you can read that, it's no. That is to say, you have here the Remain votes, and you have here the Leave votes. Does anybody know how to read this graph? Can somebody try to read it? Quelqu'un peut fabriquer une phrase qui est vraie à partir de l'information? Because you can see here, 39%. 39% of what did what? Can you do this? This is important because, as you know, in business, reading graphs is really hard. Please do.
39% of people from the Labour Party voted to Remain.
Peut-être je dois me remettre, mais je crois que c'est l'inverse. Oui.
39%
of the people who voted to Remain were from the Labour. Yes, okay, that's right. Yeah. En fait, on peut voir parce que si on les rajoute, ça fait 100. Okay. Yeah, she's absolutely right. 39% of people who voted Remain had supported Labour in the last general election. Yeah. Donc, ils ne sont pas tout à fait du parti, mais ce sont des électeurs du parti. Okay, so that's how you read it. And that's what I did. J'avais perdu un instant. Oh, yes. 39% of Remain voters voted Labour in 2015. So, yeah, that's a lot. However, 21% of Leave voters voted Remain in 2015. So you can see that although among Labour supporters there are more Remainers, it's nevertheless very divided. It's very divided, yeah, 39%, 21%. And the Conservatives are even more divided. 31% of those who voted Remain voted Conservative was not in a PowerPoint at all there, huh? Voted Conservative before, and 40% of those who voted Leave voted Conservative before. Notice that you have here the UKIP, that is to say, the United Kingdom Independence Party, or this right-wing party. That is to say, 25% of people who voted Leave voted... I can get less light on this. Voted UKIP the last time round. Now, the United Kingdom Independence Party, as its name suggests, was its main argument of the entire existence of the party. Its main argument is the European Union is really bad. So what I love is this 1% here. 1% of the people who voted Remain were supporters of the United Kingdom. These are just people who have not understood what their party is doing. You know, they're just completely lost here. Otherwise, I think you do get a more left-wing taint here because the SNP and the Greens, which is 13% of Remain, it's generally left-wing sort of parties, yeah? And there are only eight here. So there are more conservative, in the biggest sense, there are more conservative people voting Leave than Remain. And there are more left-wing people voting Remain than Leave. But nevertheless, the division is very big. I think I told you, yeah, my sister was for Remain, and my mother was for Leave, and I was for Leave, and my auntie was for Remain. You know, every family is like this, you know, just a total mess. What is funny is in France, of course, as you can imagine, among university professors in English departments in France, everybody is for Remain except me, actually. It's just a total, which is understandable in a way. Okay, so it wasn't quite a left-right issue. And what about the regions, the different regions, the different regional votes? You can see that London had far more people voting Remain. 750,000 more people voted Remain than voted Leave. I'm going to give you a lot of graphs because reading graphs correctly is really, especially in business, because otherwise you say, oh, we need 30% more lorries when they arrive. Oh, no. I mean 30% more something else. You know, it's very, very dangerous to read graphs badly. Okay, nevertheless, in London, there were still millions of people who voted Leave and millions of people who voted Remain. Yeah, it's still very divided. Yeah, but you can see that which ones voted more Leave, especially these ones here. Difficult to analyse. Certainly, these are the more post-industrial areas. These are the poorer parts of the United Kingdom. Whereas the southeast and the southwest, no doubt, have received more help from the European Union. It's more there are more more digital industries and more cultural venues and so on. There is something of a class distinction. The more working class regions voted more for leaving the European Union. And of course, there's also the question of age. How old were people who voted Remain and Leave? This is one of the arguments that the people for the those people who want a second referendum, they say, look, in the 2 years since the referendum, there are a million people who are now over 18, and the young people prefer Remain, so we should have a second referendum to allow them to decide. Okay, so as you can see, you have there a very strong majority among 18 to 24 year olds who are 73% Remain. You have to read this correctly. 73% of who voted Remain? Yeah, you have to be careful how you read this. There's a little problem with this graph. It gives an impression, which is true but not completely true. Yeah, 73% of what voted Remain? Can somebody finish that? Yeah. Would you like to try? 73% of what?
Of people between 18 and 24 years old.
No. There are two words missing. Say again. Yes. 73% of people between 18 and 24 years old who did not stay at home. And this is the problem. Many, many, many young people stayed at home and did not vote. So in fact, it gives a slightly misleading impression because if you take the group of 18 to 24 year olds, a lot stayed at home. But of those who went to vote, a large majority, 73%, voted remain. So, of course, as you know, this is always the case with statistics. You always have to be a little bit careful of what is not being shown. And among the old people, very, very old people over 65, that's really old, then 60% of people, 60% of people voted leave of the very old situation. Interesting point here, what happened here, yeah. There's a real break here, then, isn't there? The 44, yes. Now, this may be because young people are more internationalist, more pacifist, and more full of joy at internationalisation, or because they have less experience of the workplace, don't know much about politics, and so on. You can choose. Yeah, you can choose. They're very difficult to explain them, but an interesting point. The follow-up on what I was saying, that in those regions where there are more young people, turnout was lower because a lot of young people stayed at home. Just at the same time as we have this problem in elections as well, but very often young people stay at home because they don't really have the impression that there is somebody really interesting on either side. Yeah, it's not because people are stupid. It's because they're not convinced it will make much difference. So what difference will it make? Of course, I'm not saying they're right, but it's understandable. Okay, so we've gone through the sections of the United Kingdom, Northern Ireland, Wales, Scotland, England, the regions of the United Kingdom. Was it a left-right question? Was it a young-old question? Yeah, very arduous. Of young adults not registered to vote. Yes, especially with the young people, you have three groups of people. You have the young people who went out to vote. You have the young people who are registered to vote, but who did not go to vote. And you have the young people who are not registered to vote. Yeah. So it can be difficult to know how many people are involved altogether. Yeah. Only 64% of young people under 25 who were registered to vote actually voted. We're getting something of this in the general public now. You get a bit of Brexit fatigue, yeah, where a lot of people are thinking, I don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. You're not allowed to do that. This is a fascinating question. When did you finally decide how you were going to vote? So they asked people in it, you voted in the referendum. Yeah. When did you finally decide? Yeah. 39% of remainers and 36% of leavers have always known. Yeah. Oh, I've always been in favour of the European Union, or I've always been against the European Union, so it was a long time. But if you go at the other end, j'ai décidé le jour même. Yeah, 10%, 9%. But I don't know what's typical, but it seems like quite a lot, you know. I mean, on Pali Kuda Sada PCY, and 10% of people on both sides decided on the same day. Oh, I'm not sure I'll decide tomorrow. You know, I thought it was quite impressive there. And there you have the different things. Not a big difference, not really a big difference between the two. I don't think, yeah, fairly close together. But an interesting question to ask people. But nevertheless, 43% finally decided. So that is to say that 1 month before the referendum, 43% of people were still not quite sure. And it says here, these are the polls by Michael Ashcroft, did a whole series of polls, and these are they. And he said that the most important argument for leave, according to the polls, was that decisions about the UK should be taken in the UK. The second biggest argument for leave was it's important that the United Kingdom has control of its own borders and immigration. And the third important argument for leave, according to these polls, was that the powers of the United of the European Union will not be controlled by Britain if they stay inside. Just to give you an idea of what is the situation in France, how many people in France do you imagine would quite like France to leave the European Union? How many? What percentage do you imagine? You get the answer. À la question, seriez-vous favorable ou opposé à ce que la France sorte de l'Union européenne? Seuls 35% des personnes sont pour sortir et 64% qui sont pour rester. Les sympathisants de gauche comme de droite sont opposés à la sortie, contrairement aux proches du Front National qui y sont massivement favorables. Voilà. Ça, c'est il y a deux ans, je crois, ce sondage. I think it's interesting in the sense that in France, 35% of the population would quite like France to leave the Union, the European Union, and in Britain, it's 52%. It's a big difference, but it's not a total difference there. So once the referendum was out and the information was out, there was a deep political crisis, certainly the biggest crisis since 1945, perhaps the biggest crisis since 1815, the Corn Law crisis. It really is a big one. And this is why we're seeing a whole series of things. The incredible thing this week is that Theresa May is the Prime Minister, of course, and one of the leading members of the Conservative Party, Boris Johnson, would perhaps quite like to be Prime Minister, and he has been saying very, very negative things about Theresa May, his own Conservative Prime Minister. But the level of this week is incredible, really. I wonder if I can explain this in English, or should I do it in French? No, let's do it in English. There was a joke about Theresa May last year that she said that they gave an interview. She has problems looking very human. She talks a bit like a robot. And they gave her an interview. Tell us about what it was like when you were young, when you were a child. What did you love to do? Did you do any bad things when you were a child? And she said, oh, well, sometimes we used to walk through the fields of corn where you're not allowed to. Yeah, so, you know, it's not exactly sex, drugs and rock and roll, is it? Yeah. And this week, Boris Johnson, her opponent inside the main party, in the same party, had a photograph taken of him walking through a field of corn where all the corn was dying. And so he's just like openly mocking, this is a meme of course, he's openly mocking, not just saying I don't agree with you and here are the reasons, but really openly mocking the leader of his own party. I've never seen that before in British politics. It's very, very surprising. It's the sort of thing you expect from the opponent party maybe. And so that was yesterday. The photograph is on the front page of The Guardian. It's something quite amazing. So deep crisis in Britain. First of all, as I mentioned, the Prime Minister David Cameron, who's been Prime Minister for quite a while, who has introduced a large number of budget cuts, managed who had quite a good majority at the time, and he says he's decided to step down. Yeah, j'ai décidé de présenter ma démission. And of course, the joke is that he doesn't have a lot of choice. He doesn't have a lot of choice. But also, perhaps the joke is he's now going to drown. Yeah, that he's not going to be in politics anymore. David Cameron, who resigned. And now that was the first crisis actually, because David Cameron resigned, and so you would imagine, and the reason he resigned is because he was a big campaigner for Remain, And so it was difficult for him to say, I'm the right person to organise Brexit. And so you would imagine that the leaders of the Brexit campaign in the Conservative Party would be the next leader, Boris Johnson or Jacob Rees-Mogg. But there was a crisis at the last moment when they were deciding the leader, and Boris Johnson made some big mistakes, political mistakes, I mean. And he lost the votes, which was won by Theresa May. Nobody was expecting Theresa May. Many people had not heard of Theresa May. She was Home Secretary, elle était ministre de l'Intérieur, but very discreet, very discreet. And so she suddenly found, I think she won the leadership election because not many people hated her. Nobody really loved her, but not many people hated her. That can be enough sometimes, yeah. So poor thing. And certainly I have to say that Theresa May has had a very impressive capacity to hang on, you know. Everybody thought she will last 3 months, you know, and she's still there, she's still surviving somehow. The short story there is that in 2017, because she was having difficulties with her own party in Parliament, she called an election. And she thought, well, if I have more members of Parliament, then it will be easier to isolate the hard Brexiteers who don't agree with me. Unfortunately, she had unfortunately for her, she had an election and she got far fewer members of Parliament. And in fact, to remain Prime Minister, she was obliged to make a coalition with another party. And I will be talking about that in a moment. And in a very unfortunate party from the point of view of Brexit, as we shall also see in a moment. So once David Cameron had resigned, there she is then, Theresa May, who became Prime Minister. She looks a lot younger there. I think that being Prime Minister makes you old. I'm sure it does. I would not like her job. Definitely not. I mean, nobody is asking me, but, you know, if they did, I would not like her job. Meanwhile, in the other parties, well, here you have the United Kingdom Independence Party, who were an important part of the Brexit campaign. And you might think that, oh, well, they were successful, and so you might think that they would continue to become stronger. And in fact, bizarrely enough, the United Kingdom Independence Party collapsed. This is Nigel Farage. He resigned. This is a joke. And you can see what he's done is he's put the entire political system on fire, and now he's resigning. So this is obviously a partisan joke. There was really a major, major crisis in the United Kingdom Independence Party because they got a new leader who resigned after 18 days. Now, if you are a political party, it's not good if you have your new leaders resigning after 18 days. It doesn't look good. Yeah, it looks kind of shaky. So the United Kingdom Independence Party had a dreadful time. What about the other big party, the Labour Party? Well, at the same time as the campaign for Brexit or for Remain, big changes were happening in the Labour Party. And what happened is that they got a new leader, Jeremy Corbyn, and the new leader is much more left-wing than the previous leaders. Jeremy Corbyn, it's un peu le Jean-Luc Mélenchon de la politique anglaise. There are differences, but at the Labour Party conference last week, Jean-Luc Mélenchon was there with Jeremy Corbyn. You know, it's not there, they're very close together. And so obviously this is much more left-wing. The tradition of the Labour Party was in the last 10, 20 years, Tony Blair and so on, was closer to Emmanuel Macron than to Jean-Luc Mélenchon, to be frank, yeah, who introduced the 11,000, who introduced the fees for university students in Britain. It was the Labour Party who privatised the railway, etc. So they got a very left-wing leader, this is a joke These are members of Parliament of the Labour Party, but who are not very left-wing. And the old Labour values, the socialist values, have been dug out of the ground by Jeremy Corbyn. This is Jeremy Corbyn, and they are very frightened. You know, the joke is that the old socialist values are coming back to take over the Labour Party again. That's the joke. Of course, it's not supposed to be even very political in itself. Jeremy Corbyn, elected leader of the Labour Party in 2015, is shown here reviving traditional Labour socialist values to the horror of many Labour members of Parliament. And the Labour Party is having a very interesting time at the moment, very contradictory time, because most of the Labour members of Parliament do not support their leader. Most of the Labour members of Parliament were elected at a time when the general ideas were much more like François Hollande or that kind of more centrist ideas. So Jeremy Corbyn is in a difficult position because he does not have support from his own members of Parliament, but he does have support from the members of the Labour Party, and there are 500,000 new members in the last year or two. So it's also, you know, the political crisis in Britain is generalised. It's not just the question of Brexit. It's a generalised political crisis. And so the Labour Party had to decide what to do. Remember, the Labour Party was very divided. 39% of Remain people voted Labour. 21% of Leave people voted Labour. So the big division. So what should they do? A small number of people are saying, oh, Labour should call for a second referendum. But the position of the leadership of the Labour Party is that that would be a very bad idea because the party would be very much divided. And so Jeremy Corbyn is campaigning for what they call a people's Brexit. That is to organise Brexit in a way that workers' rights are defended, in a way that Eastern European migrants are well treated, etc. That's the idea of the people's Brexit. Now, of course, for the moment, they can't do it because he's not the government. Yeah? But it's not impossible that there could be another election. There could be another election in November. The crisis is so big, we don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen next week, in fact. Yeah? But we will find out. It's now 12 o'clock. We're going to have a 5-minute break. Exactly 5 minutes.